Lake Effect returns on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. Before the break, we heard from Representative Gwen Moore on the ongoing events in Ferguson, Missouri. In the wake of that fatal shooting, a so-called required reading list for Ferguson activists has been trending across social media. At or near the top of that list is a new comic book by Congressman John Lewis of Georgia and Andrew Ayton. March, Book 1, tells the story of John Lewis's childhood in the segregated South, his formative meeting with Martin Luther King Jr., and the organization of the Nashville Student Movement and its fight to integrate lunch counters. While it may be recommended reading in Ferguson, it was required reading for incoming freshmen at Marquette University. In the coming days, students and faculty will discuss the lessons in that book. Lewis and Ayton were at Marquette yesterday and sat down with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke. Congressman Lewis put the events in Ferguson in the context of his own experience in the civil rights movement.
When I observe and read about what is happening in Missouri, in this town, Ferguson, I said to myself, I thought those days were behind us. I thought we had come much farther along, but we're not there yet. On one hand, I wish I could be there to try to teach some of the young people the way of peace, the way of love, the way of nonviolence. That when you protest, try to do it in an orderly, peaceful, nonviolent fashion. And that you respect everybody. Respect the police officers. Respect members of the National Guard. Respect your fellow protesters. Do what you can to build that sense of community, that sense of one family. Because in the final analysis, we all live in the same house, part of the same family.
And maybe it's an obvious question, but why is it so important in your eyes that this take place in a respectful, non-violent way? I mean, there are obviously some people who are truly angry.
But when people engage in violence, they're trying to speak out in the only way that they know how. Dr. King said in the past that violence is the message of the unheard. People feel like they haven't been listened to. They haven't been considered. So people find the best way they can to display their feeling, their frustration, their sense of discontent. But we have to say to people, there's a better way, a more effective way. And that's what we did during the 60s. When we protested, we did it in an organized fashion. And we spoke with one strong voice. We were not out to loot, to burn, to kill, to tear things down, but to build, to be reconciled, to build a sense of community.
The book that you have written and that, Andrew, you have co-written in this case, many are citing as required reading. In fact, here at Marquette University, it has been required reading, but others are saying this is something that people in Ferguson would be well served to read. What is the message that I guess either of you or both of you hope that people who are involved on the ground in a place like Ferguson today will get out of reading this book, this history?
I think there is a real sense of discipline and orderly protest that they had in Nashville that made it uniquely successful. Within that, what created that was a sensitivity for the tactics and the use of protest as a means to make their voice heard. What we try and show in March is that those tactics were creative, they were disciplined, and they were used to great effect. And that hopefully protesters today will understand that those rules that they live by, that they conducted these protests under, are universal and conducive to the protest today.
What is the risk that you think people run if they don't abide by those rules and take that creativity to heart?
It's marginalization. If you can't follow the rules that have been so successful in the past, following in this tradition of Gandhi and Martin Luther King and others, then you will be marginalized. You will be unsuccessful.
And it's become much more difficult, much harder to win support. When you engage in a nonviolent campaign, you are able to get hundreds and thousands of people to follow and believe in your cause. And everybody can participate in a nonviolent campaign. It doesn't matter whether you're young, middle-aged, or old. You just present your body. You don't need guns and bricks. You don't need your weapon. It's peace. It's love. It is nonviolence.
Well, and let me ask a question that maybe shows the cynicism of our times. Do you think there are those out there that would fan the flames of violent protest in an effort to try to marginalize this cause and others like it?
There may not be a deliberate, systematic effort on the part of people, but I think from time to time that individuals come along to try to take advantage of a very bad situation and use it for other means, for other purpose.
Is there a difference in the message or the lesson that you hope people will get from this book when you come to a place like Marquette? And I'm not saying that there aren't students at this university who take part in protests, nonviolent protests, but you're speaking to a student body that is geographically removed and probably in a lot of other ways removed from the kinds of issues that are just below the surface in a place like Ferguson. What do you hope that students at a place like Marquette get from this history?
It is my hope that students here at this great university would be inspired by the history, by the passion of another generation of students and young people that were deeply inspired by the action of individuals like Gandhi, of Martin Luther King Jr., and Rosa Parks, Thoreau, and others. We didn't have money. We didn't know anything about the internet. Hadn't heard of social media. But we used what we had. We used our bodies. We believe in the moral force and the goodness of humankind, and we appeal to that. We were arrested. We were jailed. We were beaten. But we never lost hope. We never gave up. We kept the faith. We kept our eyes on the prize. And we won. We had a great victory. And we're saying to people today through March that you, too, can follow in that tradition.
Andrew Iden, can you put this book in a historical context and compare it to others that came before?
You know, during the late 50s and early 60s, there was a number of comic books that were used to help educate and inspire the earliest days of the civil rights movement, in particular one called Martin Luther King and the Montgomery Story. But there were others. There were some from the NAACP. There were some from SNCC. And they were used in particular to show the finer points, to show the details in an illustrative way that reached the broadest possible audience. And that's what we're trying to do now with March. People don't think that Dr. King ever read comics, much less helped edit one. But in fact, he did in the fall of 1957. And, you know, I really believe that we've come to a point where it's time for the students, for the young people, to form a new organization similar to SNCC that operates on a national level and coordinates nonviolent activities, that leverages the power of social media to not simply create passive acts such as clicking or retweeting or liking, but to create action, to inspire young people to use their bodies, to put themselves out there, and to create direct action campaigns when we see injustices, whether it be in Ferguson or elsewhere.
Do you think that call is stronger to students coming in this graphic form?
Absolutely. As we see with Comic-Con culture growing all across America, the number of graphic novels being checked out from our libraries is the fastest growing section of any platform in the library. This is what young people read. This is what I read. I mean, I'm a pretty big comics fan, and I have been almost my entire life. So I think by putting it in this way, we make it plain, as congressmen and others have said during the civil rights movement. You got to make it plain. You got to make it simple, and make it so that they can understand. And that's what we're trying to do.
Congressman, did it take any convincing to want to tell this story in a comic book form?
Well, it did take some convincing, but it was not that hard. It was not that difficult. And Andrew came to me and said, "Congressman, you should write a comic book." He was on the way to, after the campaign was over, to Comic-Con, a convention, and people started making fun of him. And I said, "You shouldn't laugh. You should make." That was another comic book, the one he just spoke of, edited by Martin Luther King Jr., that inspired me and others. And I'm glad I said yes. I'm glad that we did it. And people reading it all over America and even abroad.
You've now served in Congress since 1987. How do you feel your calling in the political world has changed in the 27 years you have been an elected official?
Well, as an elected official, and in the Congress in particular, I feel to some degree freer to say what I want to say, do what I want to do, and speak up and speak out. Because the folks that elected me, they've been very good to me, and I tried to be good to them. Now, some may disagree with me, but they would say John Lewis is an independent person, and he would do what is right, he would do what is fair, and I'm going to continue to support him, and I'm going to continue to vote for him. But I tell them, you know, I'm going to speak up. I'm going to get in trouble. But it's good trouble. It is necessary trouble. So I hope that this book, March, will inspire another generation of young people and those of us not so young to get in trouble. Be bold. Be courageous. Just go for it. I happen to think in this day and age, as Americans, we're too quiet. We need to make some noise. We need to move our feet.
Well, Congressman John Lewis and Andrew Iden, thank you both so much, and best of luck.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you, Mitch.
Representative John Lewis serves Georgia's 5th Congressional District. He's the co-author, along with staffer Andrew Iden, of the comic book March, Book 1. The book is required reading for Marquette University's incoming class. Lewis and Iden were at Marquette yesterday, where Lewis was awarded an honorary degree, and they spoke with Mitch Tyke. Coming up next, how Old World Wisconsin balances preserving historic artifacts with presenting reproductions when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio.